When I pull up to the parking lot, it's time to level up. Dial in, showing out for your team. Listen up, get you some, I stand the fan to give you what you need. Fan fuel, game time, turn up the intensity. Team colors bleeding out, 5-hour energy. For a limited time, get the fan fuel flavor at 5hourenergy.com.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Payne and Pendergast with you. We'll do the power ranking of the power rankings at the top of the hour. I'm very curious how the experts are viewing the Texans. Do they view the Sunday night game as a missed opportunity and a choke job, or do they view it as the Texans stood in against the Lions, you know, the best, maybe the best team in football,
right?
And it came down to a field goal at the end. I'm very
right.
curious.
Without,
how they see
as
that.
I'm slowly coming around to, is that okay? If I look at it objectively, they did that without Nico Collins and without Will Anderson, which is, it sounds overly simplistic, and yet sometimes things are simple because they're true. Yeah, not having your two best football players on the team right now is going to matter, and it's going to make a difference. It's just that you also look at, okay, but they've also lost three of the last four games. If they hadn't lost to the freaking Jets, who then went out and got destroyed the next week, that part of it makes it really, really hard to just excuse it all away. But yeah, they'll be a better team if and when they get their two best players back.
Yeah, well, and just the last thing I would add, just to the downside, the complete ineptitude on offense in the second half of these football games is just, that's an extreme thing. And somebody asked on the 5-hour Energy fan line, hey, Sean, how many games have they not scored a single touchdown in the second half of a football game this year? The answer is 6 out of the 10. They've gone 0 touchdowns. They've got 6 total touchdowns in the second half of football games this year. 6 of the games this year, they've been completely shut out. The news.
Well, and that young up-and-coming, I don't know if you've heard of this J.J. Watt fella.
He's a broadcaster, yeah. I
the
see
one
him on
that
the
I
McAfee
think,
show.
The one that frames it better, I think, in terms of how it feels, was he pointed out, because we've been saying, hey, they haven't scored a touchdown in the second half in the last 4 games. Not scoring a touchdown in the second half in 5 of the last 6 games sounds... That's a 6-game stretch where you've struggled to do anything in the second half. Yeah, that's tough.
Well, and the only second half you scored touchdowns in was against the New England Patriots when they were at rock bottom and they were turning the ball over like crazy in the second half of that game. They were giving you short fields in that game. If you know, that's probably way too much detail, but it's emblazoned into my brain now because they've been so bad. The breaking news that we teased coming into this segment is that the Bears have fired offensive coordinator Shane Waldron. So now Caleb Williams, number one overall pick, savior of the Bears franchise, a quarterback that Bears fans were celebrating as their greatest quarterback in the history of the team before he even took a snap, and who at times has looked good this year, but for most of the time, and especially recently, he's been running for his life and he's not looked good. All the things that were on the scouting report to the negative for Caleb Williams, Seth, coming in, even though he's called a generational prospect, there were some negatives on there. They've been coming back to roost quite a bit over these last few weeks. Waldron is the one that is, I say, taking the fall. It's not like Waldron's been doing a great job or anything like that, but they are firing. So 10 games into his NFL career, 9 games, whatever it is, Caleb Williams is on his second offensive coordinator.
and Shane Waldron, there's some similarities there in that the questions in the offseason were, okay, is Bobby Slowick going to be able to engineer or be the architect of an actual, a credible rushing attack? And so far, Joe Mixon has looked good, and yet the rushing attack is certainly not one to be feared. They don't consistently run the ball when they need to run the ball well. Shane Waldron's a guy who was hired, and I feel like there was a whole lot of him. Oh, okay. Yeah. All right. Well, he was the passing game coordinator for the Rams, which we all know, just like Bobby Slowick was the passing game coordinator for the 49ers.
Yep.
All right. It's a glorified name for you're the assistant to the actual guy who's coordinating the passing game.
Yeah.
Whether it's McVay or Kyle Shanahan. The run game, where Waldron, when he was with the Seahawks in 3 seasons, was always in the bottom half of the league in the run game. And hasn't shown any signs that he can actually do it with the Bears either, especially with a young quarterback where you'd love to have that run, a running element to it. It feels like there's some Bobby Slowick elements to this.
There's a lot of similarities here. I mean, you outlined a few of them right there. I mean, this was a team that went and got weapons for its young quarterback in the offseason. Mm-hmm. Like the Texans and the Bears probably, they're very kind of mirror images of each other from the standpoint of they went and got like sort of a big three. You know, when it comes, you know, the Bears, they got DJ Moore in the trade for Bryce Young. He was already there when Caleb got there. They went and traded a fourth round pick for Keenan Allen. They used the ninth overall pick on Roma Dunze. So they went and got three big wide receivers, and everybody thought that, and they signed DeAndre Swift. It's going to be a big fireworks show. Similarly, the Texans already had Nico Collins and Tank Dell in the fold. They go and they get Stephon Diggs. They trade for Joe Mixon. So there, and I think similarly with both teams, the offensive lines have really, really struggled. Mm-hmm. I think there's a lot of question marks about the composition of the offensive line and maybe the evaluation of the offensive line in both places. This is a really interesting story from a Texans perspective. Now, to be clear, I don't think Bobby Slowick's getting fired. I know there's a lot of people. You look at the text page today, the 5-Hour Energy fan line. We were talking about Slowick at some point during the show, Seth, and I don't know what triggered it, what you or I said, but there were six straight texts from different people of fire Bobby Slowick. So I don't know what it was we said at that point, but there is that sentiment out there. I don't think that's happening with the Houston Texans. I don't think D'Amico Ryans is firing Bobby Slowick.
It doesn't feel like something that's going to happen in season.
Yeah, that's what I mean. By the time
you get Nico Collins back, it's going to just be, I would say it's too late to make that change. The Bills made it relatively late last year. They made their coordinator change about 2/3 of the way through the season. Yeah. I'll be surprised if they fire him in season. If Nico Collins comes back and they still struggle with a lot of the things they were struggling with offensively when Nico Collins was healthy still, Nico Collins was producing. The offense was not. You know, we got to remember that. So if Nico Collins comes back and he keeps producing, but the offense is still a mediocre offense, yeah, you got to make a decision in the offseason, and you got to have answers. It's going to be an ugly offseason for D'Amico if the offense doesn't improve on what they did back when Nico Collins was healthy the first time. It's going to feel a lot like the Texans in 2010.
Yeah.
Where you're just like, what are we doing here with the defense? Yeah, like do something about the defense. Oh, you're just going to roll with these guys again, huh? All right, Gary Kubiak.
Yeah.
And then finally in 2011, they went out and got Wade Phillips.
Yeah, well, and that was, and Bob McNair had to kind of step in on that.
Yeah.
You know, like that was how that went down. So, yeah, that's right. They brought back Frank Bush in 2010, and it got worse. So, yeah, there's too much talent. And look, man, the fact of the matter is you're burning daylight on a really valuable piece of your a really valuable time of your franchise here with C.J. Stroud still so cheap on the books, you know, and you can't be doing that by underperforming. Does this save Matt? Does this mean Matt Eberflus is still back for the Bears, do you think? Or does he? Is my value pick of him being 25-1 to be the next head coach? I feel like my ticket took a hit today, Seth. That instead of firing Eberflus and cashing my 25-1 ticket on Eberflus as the next head coach fired, that Shane Waldron will be the sacrifice bunt here in the whole thing.
I think that given just NFL owners in general and how they operate, they're going to just try to go for the absolute opposite of Matt Eberflus. They're going to say, yep, we messed up. We should have hired an offensive-minded head coach with a young quarterback, all of that, which sometimes it's the right strategy, sometimes it isn't. But the Shane Waldron, he's not Mike Tomlin. He's not Bill Belichick. He's not a defensive-minded – excuse me, not Matt Eberflus.
Matt Eberflus.
Eberflus is not those head coaches that can get the most out of multiple different offensive coordinators unless they show some kind of real signs of juice or life here.
Yep. Let's see here. Text message, 5-Hour Energy fan line. 5-Hour Energy, the official energy shot of Sports Radio 610 and football superfans. The last straw for Waldron was the clip of Caleb Williams – shaking his head and rolling his eyes at him on Sunday. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Kind of like the last straw for Robert Saleh was Aaron Rodgers shoving him away when Saleh was going in for the hug.
And I think that CJ, to his credit, he's been vocally supportive of Bobby Slowick these last few weeks. He's been the one up saying that guys got to really buy in and Bobby's making the right calls, but guys aren't executing. And I do agree with that. I mean, CJ himself would tell you he was one of those guys who wasn't executing. When They'd schemed a wide open Tank Dell in the second half. There was a touchdown there for the taking in the third quarter, and CJ just threw a bad ball. So it's not 100% on Bobby Slowick. Guys have to execute, but it does. Guys executing, that's on the offensive coordinator. Some coordinators just do a better job of getting their guys to execute. So it's not, you make a mistake if you boil it down to simply play calling with the offensive coordinator. It's, yeah, the guys executing, that falls on the offensive coordinator as well.
Yeah, there was, I lost the text here, but there was someone here blaming Bobby Slowick for playing too conservative, playing not to lose. Do you think the conservative approach, does that come from higher up than Bobby Slowick? Do you think D'Amico says, here's the approach we want to take? You know, we want to grind clock, we want to run the ball, and then Bobby has to pick the best running play, that kind of thing?
No, I think that in his mind's eye, you want to run this offense where the run game and the pass game complement each other, and where you're running the ball and it looks the same as your pass plays. So you set up the, frankly, everything that the Lions do really well.
Yeah.
I mean, Jared Goff probably doesn't get enough credit for how good he is at the deception side of things. I remember a couple weeks ago, he got sacked when he wasn't even holding the ball because he's so good with the fakes and everything else. And I'm watching the Lions, and man, some of the misdirection and some of the deception, it's next level. They do a really good job with it, and Jared Goff is a big part of that. So, yeah, they want to be able to run the ball, make that look exactly like the pass, and then run play action off of that. The problem is the Texans' offensive line, it's not just that they can't run the ball when they need to run the ball, and it's not just that they suck on first down or what have you. It's that there's nothing about that way the offensive line operates that puts linebackers and safeties in a bind in terms of reading pass or run.
Mm-hmm.
It's very obvious what play they're running. Za'Darius Smith after the game last week said somewhere in point in the game, he said, hey guys, just listen to the O-line calls for the pass protection. And this is something where, sometimes offensive coordinators or offensive line coaches think defensive linemen are dumber than we actually are, even though we're not the brightest bunch, but
bright enough.
When you're hearing guys give a rip call, which means a slide to the right or Liz or what have you, it's pretty easy to know what pass protection's coming on and if they're not sprinkling in dummy calls along the way.
Yeah.
And that's when teams can really start feasting. And it sounds like, when you've got a young center who's playing the position this year for the first time, probably not a whole lot of dummy calls or anything else like that because these guys can't operate on that level. Mm. Yeah, basically the Lions were in the playbook for the Texans.
Yeah, they had the answers to the test. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Positives from the Lions game on Sunday as we continue. We're still digging into it a little bit here because it was Sunday night game. The PFF scores, the Pro Football Focus, do the PFF scores for the five best Texans match what the eye test told us? We have that. We'll do the power ranking of the power rankings coming up at the top of the hour. Stay there.